everybody. I'm back. It's Karen Hartglass, and we're right in the middle of the program. It's all about food. It's always funny to hear those commercial breaks when you hear your own voice. It's like, wait a minute, that's me, but I'm here. No, I'm there. Yes, shall we talk some more about food, my favorite subject? Before, at the beginning of the program, I was talking about the World's Fair, and I want to talk a little bit more about that just before we move on to the next guest. And when I was a kid and I went to the World's Fair, it was a spectacular thing, and one of the things that I loved was the Ferris wheel. There was the U.S. Tires, which is now Uniroyal, had a big Ferris wheel, and there was this replica. It was a toy that you could buy, and I so wanted that little replica, that little Ferris wheel toy, and I didn't get it. And going back to visit the anniversary festival this weekend, they had at the Queen's Museum all kinds of things from the original fair, and they had that little replica Ferris wheel behind the glass along with a lot of other things, and I looked at it, and it was nothing. It was, I just kept thinking, I couldn't believe that I coveted this thing so intensely. Well, I was six at the time, but looking at it and seeing how nothing it is, it made me laugh. It made me think about so many things, the way we perceive things, either as children or adults, something having power or being so magical, when really it's just something we're creating in our heads. We have a lot of power in our heads, and we should be doing good things with them. Anyway, it was fun to see. So let's talk about food, shall we? And I'll bring on my next guest, Keith McHenry. He's an artist and author and helped start Food Not Bombs in Massachusetts in 1980. He has recovered, cooked, and shared vegan food with the hungry for over 30 years. Keith has been arrested nearly 100 times for his efforts, spending over 500 nights in jail, and at one point faced 25 to life in prison. He co-authored Food Not Bombs, How to Feed the Hungry and Build Community, and wrote and illustrated Hungry for Peace, How You Can Help End Poverty with End War with Food, Not Bombs. Keith, welcome to It's All About Food.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That's exciting.
Oh, you are so exciting. You have been doing such great work for so long. How do you do it?
Well, you just have to wake up every morning and go find some food and cook it. That's basically it. And there's no problem finding people that need food. And the biggest kind of crazy thing it has been that it's vegan food, and to watch this coming Saturday, the 24th of May, is the 34th anniversary of the founding of Food Not Bombs. And it's just, you know, at the beginning, people had no idea what vegan and vegetarian food was. And now, you know, people that really aren't even vegan are excited to come eat our food because they know it's organic, whole foods, and makes them feel a lot better. So even though they might be eating at Burger King and McDonald's some time during the week, we start hearing more and more from people that they really appreciate our food, even though it doesn't have meat.
Okay, now let's just talk about the title to begin with, Food Not Bombs. It's pretty self-explanatory, but I imagine, especially now with all of the with our phones being tapped and all kinds of undercover work, anything that has the word bombs in it is going to be looked at kind of questionably. Have you had problems with the name at all?
The name has caused some problems over the decades. And we discovered not long after we were first arrested for feeding the hungry in Golden Gate Park in August of 1988, that we had been declared one of America's most hardcore terrorist groups. And we learned that Thanksgiving weekend. It turned out that the National Guard armies all around the country had a workshop on domestic terrorism, which featured our logo. And we know that because National Guard's personnel returning home from the weekend would approach our volunteers or just people who happened to have purchased a Food Not Bombs button and had it on their coat. and said, oh, wow, we just studied them in domestic terrorism class. They're America's most hardcore terrorist group. And then most recently, in April of 2009, there was a on C-SPAN, I happened to catch this lecture twice, where a State Department official compared Funa bombs to Al-Qaeda, who was more dangerous, Al-Qaeda or Funa bombs, and their conclusion was that we were more dangerous because people liked us, we were friendly, people enjoyed the food, and it was a threat because Americans might think money should be diverted from military spending towards things like education, healthcare, and stuff like that.
Oh, I was wondering what they were worried about. I see now. So they think that you might take money away from the defense and put it towards healthier food and health care. What a concept.
Yes, and this is apparently, you know, I saw the lecture on C-SPAN when I was speaking at Princeton, you know, after my lecture at Princeton. Then I went to speak at Harvard Law a couple of days later, saw it again. If I had not seen it again, I would have thought I hallucinated the entire program. And, you know, it's apparently it's just that simple, that they are concerned that the American people will come across a food on bombs table and see all the people coming to eat, and then want to, and then start talking to us, see the sign saying food not bombs and so on. And then lo and behold, we, end up convincing them that they should, you know, organize with, you know, when a congressional candidate comes up for election or something and says, oh yeah, I'm going to fund Social Security, or I'm going to fund housing, or I'm going to fund, SNAP or WIC or something like that, that they will do it. And then, oh, my goodness, there's another $1 billion gone from building drones, or like this whole thing that Chuck Hagel's been talking about, $38 billion to upgrade nuclear weapons arsenal. And until the Ukrainian crisis, it didn't seem likely that we'd be at war with Russia again. So, you know, maybe that's part of the war on Russia theory, is we need to scare the American public into spending money on bombs.
Well, I think it may sound simple, but if we could make sure every person on this planet was well fed, we wouldn't see the majority of problems that we see on the planet today.
That's right. You would not be able to even recruit actual real terrorists to be terrorists if everybody had adequate nutrition or in the security, just knowing that you will be able to eat.
Yep.
And I was in Ethiopia a couple of years ago at the vegan, both the first and the second Ethiopian Vegan Association conference. And there's like 2 million people facing starvation right now. And the crazy thing is that there's this amazing amount of food being grown in Ethiopia. The Nile River is irrigating massive areas of cropland, beautiful produce, amazing amount of tulips that are grown for the European market by Dutch companies. Mm. So there's all this food being exported out of Ethiopia while 2 million people are facing starvation. And this is, you know, this is very common with famines, where the food, there's adequate food, the local food without be diverted to people living there. It's all about lack of democracy and about profit.
Yes.
And now, for instance, Africa with mass starvation all across the continent, huge amounts of land are cultivated. There's, you know, it's an amazingly great agricultural continent. But that food now is being controlled by, like, either European or Chinese or Saudi, Bahraini, you know, other Middle Eastern kingdoms and so on. They're all diverting that food to their markets, and they're controlling agriculture. And only people really profiting in Africa from all this is the rulers of these countries, you know, and some of the wealthiest donors. And then another crazy thing is in Nigeria, and who was providing food aid credibly to Sudan during that famine was Nigeria, and they were doing it by selling oil to the rest of the world, using that money to buy their own food, and then shipping it to Sudan. And they're, you know, I talked to the Minister of Food Security a couple of times when I was visiting in Abuja, and they said, well, it's not because we're altruistic. We just don't want like 5 million people from Sudan crossing into our country at this point. But we're going to have problems. And now with Boko Haram and all that, you can see that their point might be well taken. Something that people that is can use to manipulate events to their own favor. So food is a weapon, goes way back, and that I think also plays a role in the food not bombs crisis when governments try to stop us, and that's because they know we give out food without restriction to anyone that wants it.
Food is a weapon. Food is a weapon. Food can be used as a weapon.
Yeah, it's really, there's evidence of Hitler using the withholding of food and the rewarding of food to manipulate events before, leading up to and during World War II. Yeah, the U.S. has done the same thing. The AID is often.
Okay, let's talk about when you do try and feed people who need food. So I understand there are different places in the country that don't allow you, your group, or people in general to feed people who need food.
Yeah, there's roughly right now over 50 cities that have actually banned or limited the distribution of free food in public. And it's not limited to Food Not Bombs, although frequently Food Not Bombs is the target of these actions. And so there's been over 1,000 arrests of Food Not Bombs volunteers starting in August, August 15th, 1988 in San Francisco. But it's more recently we've seen new restrictions in Columbia, South Carolina, where they're demanding we pay $127 a week for a permit. We have to apply for a permit every week to share food there. We've been sharing food there for decades. Other cities like Orlando created a law that you could only share food twice a year per park and had to apply for a permit and had to move around to 46 different parks to, we were sharing and still do share twice a week in Orlando. And so they were making it so that each week you had to get a permit. You could only share in that park for, that week, and then you had to move to another park. And many of the parks actually had no access to anybody, to public transportation or things. So there's no way that anybody would ever be able to get to the parks to eat. They'd have to walk through people's backyards and things.
What do you think the purpose of the permit is in some of these places to have you get a permit? What is that going to do in their minds?
This is what my experience with permits are, is that they have the permits so they can withdraw the permits. and that's what we saw in San Francisco. So at first there was no permit required, but the police arrested us for violating a picnic ordinance or something. It wasn't even clear what the actual rules of that law were, and no one could really explain it. The police just said that they were stopping us because we were making a political statement, and that wasn't allowed. But it was park code 7.03, that we were violating. So normally, if you violated that, you'd get a ticket for $25. But in their case, they brought out 45 riot police and arrested 9 of us.
Whoa.
And by the end of the month, they arrested a total of 94 people. And then the mayor gave us a permit. But then, as soon as they wanted to get rid of us again, they deleted the permit process. They, in the meantime, got a court order against us serving food without a permit. And we got arrested for felony conspiracy to serve food in violation of a court order. So that seems to be what the point of the permit process is.
And what are their fears of people giving homeless people or people that are hungry free food?
The issue for most of these is, it turns out, it really does come down to pressure by military contractors in many cases. And there is, and other large corporations who feel that money that would be going to them through government contracts and so on might be diverted to things like education and health care. So, for instance, people think of Orlando's big industry is Disney World. But actually, the larger corporation that brings in as much money as Disney World is Lockheed Martin. Mm. And so there is we don't have evidence that there was a direct conversation between the authorities in Orlando and Lockheed Martin. But the, you know, it's a big military contracting area in Central Florida because of its connection to Cape Canaveral and all that. And so there, you know, it's just very interesting. Whenever you get a very repressive situation like San Francisco, where we found out it was Bank of America, Bechtel Corporation, and Chevron, and you know, people think of Chevron as an oil company, but we have to remember that half the oil that is used and sold in the United States is sold to the military. So that's a huge, you know, like compared to us driving around in cars and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, to have that one customer, the U.S. military, and then to have their tax base be threatened was apparently a threat. Raytheon Missile System, Grumman, General Electric, these are all companies who apparently feel threatened that with their the profitability of their contracts with the military, and don't want money, you know, they're feeling that there's only so much tax dollars to go around, and they want to get the largest chunk of it. Right now they're in all the military, including paying soldiers and stuff, something that, you know, is really essentially minimum wage for, you know, enlisted people, you know, comes to nearly half the federal budget. Some estimate this year was 60% of the federal income tax that people are paying is going just to service the military, either past wars or current.
I don't like hearing that. I don't like to know that. Well, I like to know that, but I don't like to hear it. Yep. Okay. Well, tell me some good stories of where Food Not Bombs came along and fed people and there was a happy ending.
Okay, yeah. That turns out there's a ton. Right now, I hope it's not so noisy on this interview, but I'm at the what's called Home Connection. And it's in Santa Cruz, California, and the community's gotten this huge auditorium and put all these homeless services in there, including dental work, eye doctors, podiatrists, wow. All this amazing stuff. And so while I'm outside handing out this, you know, all this bread and organic produce that I received from local natural food stores here in Santa Cruz, we've been seeing all the people come up and go, oh my God, we love Food Not Bombs. It's just wonderful. And we've got, and this is the thing, we're in 1,000 cities of the world. It's all volunteer. There's no paid staff. We have a website, foodnotbombs.net, that we're going to be upgrading shortly, but it's currently, you know, it's been there. It turns out it was actually, I didn't realize this, but we started this website within the first 12 months of the first commercial websites in America. Mm-hmm. And so it's been up there since 95, and around 95. And you can connect with your local Food Not Bombs chapter there. We have a hunger hotline. That's a toll-free number, 1-800-884-1136. And we get calls, you know, all day long from people seeking food. And then we've done some other projects like relief work. So we're doing providing meals and solar power to charge cell phones and stuff. In the Philippines, even today, we've been doing since the typhoon hit, we provided meals in 20 cities in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas after Katrina. And, you know, we were in New Orleans in several locations for over 8 months. We did Sandy relief. We've done earthquake relief, and we also are gearing up to provide meals at protests this weekend against Monsanto.
Yay.
And seeking seed sovereignty and food sovereignty, and really trying to push the whole idea of organics and non-GMO and the idea that food is a right and not a privilege.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Monsanto just for a moment, because I wanted to bring that up a while back when you were talking about the lack of food distribution in Ethiopia and other places where there's plenty of food, but it's not getting to the people who need it. And companies like Monsanto will use the excuse that they need to improve crops to feed, so that these people who are starving will have food to eat. And that's not the problem. The problem is poverty. The problem is lack of democracy. The problem is food distribution and using fertile soil for products that a small group of people benefit from exporting most of the time, rather than feeding the people who are working to grow the stuff. So GMOs is not the way to go. We just need better governments, more democracy, more equality.
Well, GMOs, in fact, because of the intellectual property rights and so on that are associated with the control of these seeds, are actually the leading cause of hunger on Earth right now. And the reason being that you see, like, for instance, in India and many other, countries like that, where they've signed on to World Trade Organization agreements or have a relationship with IMF, World Bank, and so on, and they're required to accept genetically modified seeds and chemicals, they find they go bankrupt. So thousands and thousands of farmers in areas where we need more farmers, not less farmers, have gone bankrupt because they can't save their own seeds by contract. And they end up having to get, loans to buy the seeds and chemicals. And then less and less land gets cultivated and less farmers are farming because they've gone bankrupt. And there's like thousands of farmers in India, for example, that have committed suicide because of the stress of losing their land to foreclosure because they couldn't afford to pay for the GMO products that they ended up agreeing to grow. And then you see the same thing happening in the United States, not so much the bankruptcy, but problems with cutworms have now, have adapted to BT corn, and so now they've got farmers have to spend even more money on chemicals to kill the cutworms to save their crops, and as a result, the margins are less, and you see like this kind of horrible impact that genetically modified foods are having on food, and then you have things like the dumping of GMO crops in places like Ethiopia, and you have teff, for instance, the one of the oldest grains in the world, grown in Ethiopia, being threatened by Monsanto and Gates Foundation and so on, who are trying to basically gain control of food. And as a result, a lot of people say that the Arab Spring came about because Monsanto had doubled the price of their seeds and chemicals in the year before, and basic food things, grains and particularly corn and flour increased in price so dramatically that the subsidized flour in places like Egypt and Tunisia just became out of reach for many people. They were paying half their total income just on food, and that inspired so much frustration that it evolved into revolutions.
Wow, you never hear that in mainstream news.
Very rarely. You really have to dig for that. I just wrote an article for a chapter in a book on vegan eating and so on, and found a lot of information on that. But you have to dig. It is in some mainstream things, but usually Wall Street Journal in the back pages or something like that.
Keith, we're at the end of the half hour. I wanted to thank you so much for joining me, and you're doing great, great work. Keep going.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope listeners get involved with their local Food Not Bombs group and visit foodnotbombs.net, and because we really need more cooks, and it would be great if we were sharing 7 days a week in all 1,000 cities of the world where we're currently active. So we can, we're an all-volunteer thing, so it's all about people spending their time and coming out and helping collect and cut and share free meals.
Sounds really good. I just wanted to end on a delicious note. I'm looking at your website. I'm looking at your tofu sandwich spread recipe. It looks really yummy.
Yeah, people are always shocked. And I gave that out at Conscious Living Expo down in L.A. a year ago to, hundreds and hundreds of people, and they're like, what? That's tofu? That's amazing, you know? And,
right. So go to foodnotbombs.net and check out the tofu sandwich spread and everything else that's up there. Keith, thank you again, and just keep doing it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. That's great.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this is the end of today's show. It's all about food. Visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, where there are more delicious recipes. I just posted a whole bunch of them. Forbidden nutty rice, chickpea stew, green veggie tofu scramble, toasted buckwheat. A lot of good stuff. So, have a delicious week.